Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I'm Jackie Dangermond, and I am just absolutely thrilled to be digging into one of the most exciting yet, you know, technically challenging federal agencies out there.
I'm Lauren Dangermond, and you're right. When we talk about space, we think rockets, astronauts.
The next frontier.
Exactly. The incredible aspirational ambition of putting humans back on the moon and, you know, eventually Mars.
But today, we're diving deep into the often overlooked reality. We're talking about the foundational digital nervous system that, well, that makes all of that celestial ambition even possible.
And that's my role here, to synthesize those terrestrial operational realities into a coherent strategic blueprint. We have a really detailed set of sources today that focus intensely on the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA.
Which is a massive, complex organization.
It is, and it's facing an unprecedented inflection point. And what's remarkable is that all the major stressors and the solutions are grounded right here on Earth.
Our specific mission today, the title of this incredibly detailed deep dive, is Why NASA Should Adopt ESRI to Meet Initiatives, Mandates, and Mission Requirements to Secure and Accelerate Speed to Mission.
That title. It captures the current environment perfectly. NASA is undeniably at a definitive inflection point. They are moving away from the episodic, singular achievements of the Apollo legacy.
The flags and footsteps model, right?
Exactly. And they're transitioning into the sustained, multi-decadal ambition of the Artemis Moon to Mars campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And that shift from, you know, a temporary presence to permanent operational persistence, it demands a foundational overhaul.
An overhaul in how the agency manages its infrastructure, its data, and its security profile.
All of it.
Okay, so let's unpack this operational reality. We often focus on the excitement of the launch, but our sources are stressing that NASA's immediate survival and its long-term success, they depend on resolving these complex terrestrial challenges.
They do.
So give us the scope of the problem they are currently facing on the ground, because it sounds massive.
The agency's scale is just staggering. First, they manage a vast and, frankly, often deteriorating $32 billion infrastructure portfolio.
$32
billion. With a B. And to put that into perspective for you, that portfolio includes huge tracts of land, iconic and aging facilities like the Vehicle Assembly Building at Kennedy Space Center, launch pads, specialized testing facilities. I mean, it's essentially like managing a series of small, highly complex industrial cities.
Wow.
Second, they have the critical nonstop task of securing their digital supply chain. And this is against increasingly sophisticated cyber threats in, you know, what we now call a zero trust environment.
And third,
and this is perhaps the most pressing thing for their leadership, they are grappling with persistent and highly visible audit deficiencies related to federal data mandates.
A deteriorating $32 billion portfolio, constant cyber threats, and failing mandatory audits. That really does sound like a pressure cooker for the agency's leadership, specifically the OCIO and the chief data officer.
It is.
So the core question we're tackling is how a secure, standardized geospatial system, the ArcGIS ecosystem, becomes the indispensable digital nervous system that connects NASA's scientific discovery with its, well, essential operational readiness.
It's the connective tissue. It's about moving beyond simply creating maps or, you know, these bespoke one-off solutions. It's about establishing enterprise interoperability, formal risk mitigation, and ultimately achieving the reliability required for speed of mission.
So the old way of doing things is just not going to cut it.
The old days of disparate, center-specific tools where every site did its own GIS thing, they're proving not just inefficient, but really entirely unsustainable under these mounting pressures.
That sets the stage perfectly for this strategic challenge. Let's jump right into what our sources are calling the contextual pressure cooker, the three converging vectors. So what are these three simultaneous forcing functions that are making this decision, you know, to adopt a consolidated, secure enterprise platform, an immediate mandate?
What's fascinating here is that these vectors are not isolated challenges. They interact. They amplify each other, and that's what creates this critical urgency. The first one is the massive structural change happening across the entire agency.
Oh.
The Enterprise Digital Transformation, or DT, initiative. This is NASA's big effort to rationalize its sprawling, often redundant IT systems under one unified structure. And they're doing that primarily through the new centralized NCAPS contract.
NCAPS, that's the NASA Consolidated Applications and Platform Services contract.
That's the one.
So NCTAPS isn't just a procurement mechanism. It's a fundamental power shift, isn't it?
Hmm.
Before this, individual centers had the budget and, you know, the authority to buy their own niche IT solutions.
Exactly. The DT initiative is actively trying to, let's say, defederate their IT budget and control. The goal is to accelerate the modernization of work processes and, most importantly, break down those historical data silos.
So if your geospatial capability isn't embedded as a standardized service under NCPFPS,
it will soon become obsolete across the enterprise. It's that simple. The agency is moving to a unified menu of services.
That forces consolidation. Okay, so the second vector, as you mentioned, is purely statutory. The Geospatial Data Act of 2018, GDA. What does this legal hammer actually require of NASA?
The GDA is, it's non-negotiable. It requires standardized, interoperable geospatial data management across all federal agencies. The whole goal is to achieve the FAIR principles, making data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable.
And for NASA, this is aimed squarely at those recurring audit failures from the OIG, the Office of Inspector General.
Explicitly. It mandates a level of data governance that simply doesn't exist today in their fragmented environment.
So you've got the internal IT consolidation pushing them, the legal mandate pulling them, and then the third pressure point that everyone sees, the actual mission, the Artemis campaign.
Artemis is the combination of all these pressures. We're not just talking about another trip to the moon. We're talking about building a permanent, sustained lunar presence.
And the deep space infrastructure required for that whole moon to Mars architecture.
Exactly. This requires high fidelity, real-time situational awareness, rapid decision-making, and logistical support that, frankly, far exceeds what legacy fragmented tools can handle. To succeed, NASA needs speed to mission.
And what does speed to mission actually mean in this context?
It means they need instantly available validated data for everything, from launch pad security all the way to designing astronaut traverses at the lunar South Pole.
This brings us to a really interesting cultural challenge within NASA that our sources highlight, the build versus buy debate. We know NASA has this incredible institutionalized culture of custom open source development, especially within the scientific directorates. So why is that deep-seated bespoke approach now becoming a systemic liability?
It's really a matter of scope and sustainability. The open source path, while it can be fantastic for a specific focused scientific experiment or a single center's niche need, it creates tremendous technical debt. And it struggles severely when you try to scale it up to an enterprise platform that needs to cover every center, every building, and every mission control room.
Because if a scientist writes a fantastic piece of Python code, who maintains that code when they retire, and who ensures it meets all the federal security standards?
Exactly. The OIG reports point directly to this. Without a unified toolset and strategy meaning, without a vendor who is responsible for maintenance and security updates, NASA cannot effectively promote geospatial data integration.
It leads to that center-centric approach you mentioned, where data gets trapped in silos.
Yes, and it requires huge manual effort to transfer or translate that data. And crucially, while the immediate software cost might be zero, the total cost of ownership, or TCO, it just skyrockets.
Because of the ongoing maintenance, bug fixes, and that highly complex process of federal security accreditation.
That's it.
I want to push back slightly on that TCO argument. I mean, they're NASA. They have brilliant engineers. Couldn't they just hire a team specifically to code a custom compliance layer and maintenance support? Why does it have to be a commercial off-the-shelf, a CLSS solution like Essary, to meet the GDA and security mandates?
Because of the security accreditation process, particularly the authority to operate, or ATO. To get an ATO for a custom open source aggregation, especially for mission critical systems, NASA would have to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars and often many, many months.
Just to prove it's safe.
Just into proving that every single component meets the stringent security controls. And if one open source dependency updates, the whole system might require reaccreditation from scratch.
So CDOTIS vendors, especially the ones with established federal compliance, they just absorb that massive risk and expense.
They do. And so the argument isn't necessarily about the quality of the software itself, but about the time and the capital expense required to prove to the government that the software is safe to use across the entire enterprise.
And that is the key counter-narrative.
That is where Esri's COTS solutions, like ArcGIS Enterprise, ArcGIS Indoors, ArcGIS Mission, and ArcGIS Velocity, gain a massive, almost insurmountable advantage. They're immediately deployable, scientifically validated, and, most critically, they're already FedRAMP compliant. They have done all the heavy lifting.
FedRAMP being that security pre-vetting stamp of approval. So by leveraging these pre-vetted solutions, NASA gains a superior TCO and, maybe more importantly, vastly accelerated time to value, compared to attempting to build, secure, and maintain a bespoke solution internally.
That argument is incredibly powerful when you're speaking directly to the office of the Chief Information Officer, the OCIO.
That sets the stage perfectly for the technical requirements. We really have to drill into mandates and compliance, the legal hammer. Let's elaborate on why GDA compliance is the primary driver right now for the leadership at headquarters. It's a huge liability.
It's a critical liability because the GDA of 2018 requires NASA to treat geospatial data not just as information, but as a capital asset.
Something that must be managed, protected, accounted for.
Precisely. This means ensuring standardization, minimizing duplication across all 10 centers, and promoting integration. And NASA's current decentralized model, it just makes this impossible.
And the proof of this failure lies in those audit findings. What specific language has the NASA Office of Inspector General, the OIG, used repeatedly to flag these deficiencies?
The OIG audits have been, well, relentless. They repeatedly cite a critical deficiency, a lack of a comprehensive inventory of geospatial assets.
And think about the operational risk there.
Exactly. If you're the emergency response coordinator at Marshall Space Flight Center and you need the precise utility maps for a new testing facility, those maps might be trapped on a single computer at that facility. Undocumented, unsearchable, and incompatible with your enterprise systems.
So they literally don't know what they have or where it is, let alone whether the data is standardized.
Precisely. And the OIG also noted the failure to promote geospatial data integration. This inability to share and reuse data across centers is a direct violation of the GDA's intent.
Which means valuable geospatial data gets trapped, leading to wasted effort as centers duplicate data creation, and, of course, escalating that audit risk.
That's right.
So how does standardizing on ESRI become the automated compliance engine that closes this gap for leadership, like the chief data officer?
The strategy targets the CDO and the Senior Agency Official for Geospatial Information, or SOGI, David Salvinini. And the recommended products here are ArcGIS Hub and ArcGIS Enterprise. They are positioned as the solution for automated compliance, not just manual compliance.
Tell us more about that automation aspect. Why is that such a game changer?
Well, automation is the executive dream, right? By routing all geospatial data through ArcGIS Enterprise and then exposing it via ArcGIS Hub, the system can achieve automated metadata generation.
So it happens automatically when the data is published.
It does. It means adherence to required federal standards like FGDC and ISO happens without a person having to do it. The system tags the data, describes its lineage, and makes it readily searchable. It addresses the inventory problem instantly.
Which has to significantly reduce the administrative burden on these center GIS teams, who are probably spending all their time manually tagging data right now instead of analyzing it.
It does. And this standardization allows for seamless integration with the federal geo platform. So instead of NASA having to manually upload and verify data for federal sharing, the ArcGIS system acts as the pipe, minimizing duplication and reducing the immense audit risk that comes with non-compliant data management.
So ESRI offers the easy button that solves the statutory problem.
That's a good way to put it.
Compliance is foundational, but security is existential. Let's transition to the security and the FedRAMP imperative. We know federal agencies are all shifting to a zero-trust architecture. What defines the critical security moat that ESRI offers here?
This is where CONSES vendors gain their strongest strategic advantage against any internal custom builds. Federal mandates require strict FedRAMP authorization, the Federal Risk and Authorization Management Program for any cloud services.
Right. And FedRAMP ensures services meet over 325 security controls, all rigorously vetted by the government.
And ESRI's achievement of both FedRAMP moderate and high impact levels for its cloud deployments is a distinct competitive advantage against any non-compliant open source aggregation.
So why can't a determined open source community achieve FedRAMP high?
The issue isn't really the initial compliance. It's the continuous maintenance required to maintain that compliance. FedRAMP authorization is a living process. It requires continuous monitoring, security updates, quarterly vulnerability scanning reports.
It's a full-time job.
A huge one. And an open source aggregation just lacks the centralized governance and budget to maintain that rigorous 2047 security posture across an entire enterprise scale.
And what does that high baseline specifically enable for NASA? Why is that so important?
The high baseline is vital for mission critical data. This is where the loss of confidentiality, integrity, or availability could be, you know, catastrophic.
So you're talking about sensitive information like launch timelines or infrastructure security diagrams.
Or the precise location of international partners' assets. Exactly. Esri's ability to operate ArcGIS online and Enterprise on Kubernetes in this high-security environment means it can support data that simply cannot be hosted on platforms with only moderate or low authorization.
Which means, as the NCCEPS contract consolidates IT,
the tolerance for non-FedRAMP tools will just vanish, forcing that fragmentation out of existence.
So the core value proposition for the OCIO isn't just about security compliance, it's about expediting the operational mission.
Precisely. The pre-vetted certified status of Esri products drastically expedites the authority to operate, the ATO process. For the OCIO, the pitch is that Esri offers a rapid, secure path to deployment that bypasses the lengthy, expensive, and often failed internal security reviews required for custom solutions.
It's a risk reduction and time-to-market solution just dressed in security language.
Exactly right.
We've covered compliance and security, which are essential digital foundations. But now let's look at how this geospatial system helps manage the, you know, the physical reality of the agency. We are moving into the Terrestrial Challenge, NASA's $32 billion ground game. This links the digital strategy directly to the health of their physical assets.
And this connects the geospatial solution back to NASA's highest level strategic document, Strategic Goal 4, modernizing mission support. This goal mandates enhancing capabilities and operations by modernizing mission support, which includes renewing their physical and digital infrastructure to be more resilient and efficient.
And you mentioned earlier that the most immediate, really existential threat to that physical infrastructure portfolio is climate change. We are talking about critical national assets being slowly degraded or, you know, outright destroyed by environmental factors.
That's right. And the risk is geographically concentrated. NASA manages over 134,000 acres of land and 1,800 leased assets, and critically, many of their most valuable and irreplaceable facilities.
Kennedy Space Center in Florida, Johnson Space Center in Houston, Langley in Virginia.
Exactly. They're all coastal and highly susceptible to sea level rise and extreme weather events. The agency's 2024 Climate Action Plan explicitly acknowledges that mission fulfillment is now dependent on their capacity to manage these infrastructure risks.
So if a hurricane is coming, or if sea level rise is accelerating, NASA needs a legally defensible data set to prioritize which hardening projects to fund.
And ArcGIS has to become that analytical engine. It absolutely must. They need tools that can ingest complex climate models, like surge maps and future flood projections, and overlay them with their critical asset inventory. They need to know the precise elevation of the electrical switchgear in the vehicle assembly building relative to a Category 4 storm surge.
Wow.
And that level of analysis requires leveraging GIS tools for sea level rise modeling and supporting internal science initiatives like the Climate Adaptation Science Investigators, CASI, program by translating their scientific output into actionable operational dashboards for facility directors.
Moving from external threats to internal efficiency, let's look at the operational pressure of the Digital Transformation and Future of Work, FOW, initiative. NASA is trying to reduce its physical footprint and save money on leases, right?
This is a tremendous pressure point from Congress and the Office of Management and Budget, OMB. NASA is utilizing what they call activity-based planning to inform its strategy for reducing leased space. But here's the problem.
What's the problem?
Facility managers are still reliant on static CAD drawings. If you ask a manager today how many desks were actually used in Building 12 in the last month, they don't have a reliable answer. They face the ghost booking problem, where spaces are reserved but not used, yet they're still being maintained and incurring energy costs.
Static drawings just don't cut it in a dynamic hybrid world. This is where our sources identify a specific critical wedge product, ArcGIS Indoors. So why is this product the perfect entry point for the Office of Strategic Infrastructure, OSI?
ArcGIS Indoors is the technology that delivers the digital twin of the workplace. And we should define what that means for NASA. It's not just a fancy 3D visualization. It's a dynamic, interactive information system that's tied to real-time data.
So you integrate Indoors with existing facility management systems.
Like IBM Teriga, which NASA uses widely. And by doing that, they transform those static floor plans into dynamic, location-aware maps.
So what does a facilities manager actually do with ArcGIS Indoors that they couldn't do before?
They gain instant granular operational awareness. They can generate utilization heat maps based on Wi-Fi data or badge swipes to inform their divestment strategies.
So they can say, we thought this floor was 80% used, but the Indoors data shows it's only 35%.
Exactly. And employees can use the mobile apps for Blue Dot Navigation to find the nearest meeting room or colleague. It's a tool that supports safety, knowing where people are during an evacuation security, and critically rigorous utilization analysis.
The ROI here has to be absolutely crystal clear for the OSI leadership. The pressure to demonstrate efficiency and reduce the federal footprint is immense.
It is the driving force. The ability of ArcGIS Indoors to provide validated data for right-sizing the real estate portfolio and demonstrating a clear return on investment through measurable lease consolidation and energy savings. It's highly compelling. It moves the discussion from opinion and outdated reports to legally defensible, quantifiable location data.
And the best part is that NASA already has an internal proof point for this success. The Langley Research Center, ARRC success story. That's huge because it removes the risk of adopting a new system.
This is the internal GIS gold standard that every account manager must leverage. The LARRC GIS team, spearheaded by the internal evangelist Brad Ball, pioneered the digital twin concept for facilities. They mapped over 200 facilities down to the location of fire extinguishers, HVAC units, and critical infrastructure.
And this isn't some niche project. It supports over 300 applications and serves thousands of users.
3,500 users annually at RRC. It's fully operational.
So what specifically contributed to the documented financial benefit? It's reported they saved up to $1 million a year.
That $1 million per year saving is a documented ROI in operation and maintenance costs. For instance, by creating a digital twin, they could optimize HVAC scheduling based on actual room usage rather than running units constantly.
So they save money on energy.
A lot of money on energy. They avoided maintenance disasters by monitoring infrastructure digitally. And the ability to instantly locate and dispatch maintenance crews to a specific piece of equipment rather than relying on paper maps, that dramatically reduced downtime.
So the strategy is to package this RRC success as a repeatable enterprise solution template and export it to other sites.
Exactly. As a best practice to massive consolidation sites like Johnson Space Center and Kennedy Space Center.
We've established the foundation in compliance and infrastructure. Now let's pivot to the true north of the agency, the celestial mission. This is accelerating the celestial mission Artemis and open science.
And this is where the visibility and the largest budgets reside, specifically within the Exploration Systems Development Mission Directorate, ESDMD, and Space Operations Mission Directorate, SOMD. Geospatial capability is no longer an ancillary feature. It is absolutely central to managing the massive complexity and ensuring safety during the Artemis campaign.
So we need to talk about real-time situational awareness, especially around the choreography of launch and recovery operations at Kennedy Space Center. I mean, that is an extremely complex, time-sensitive operation.
It is mission control on steroids. A launch requires coordinating all these disparate groups: security forces, range control, tracking recovery team ships and helicopters in the Atlantic, and managing highly sensitive airspace restrictions.
And traditional systems struggle with the latency and just the sheer volume of data streams.
They do. And this environment requires two specific high-end ESRI products, ArcGIS Mission and ArcGIS Velocity.
Okay, so how does ArcGIS Mission provide that tactical advantage for launch safety and speed?
ArcGIS Mission provides a tactical common operating picture, a COP, designed for fast mobile operations.
Mm.
It's deployed to mobile devices carried by security teams, bomb squads, and range safety officers. This allows the launch director or the recovery mission commander to see the real-time location of every single asset simultaneously.
And it also facilitates peer-to-peer communication.
Yes, and location sharing. And crucially, it functions seamlessly even in offline or intermittent network environments.
That offline capability sounds vital, especially if they're chasing down the Orion capsule after splashdown in some remote area with poor satellite coverage.
Absolutely. Remote recovery zones have notoriously unreliable network connectivity. ArcGIS Mission ensures that data like weather updates, security perimeters, and location tracks is continuously available and shared among dispersed teams. It reduces decision latency from minutes to seconds during critical operations.
And where does ArcGIS Velocity fit into this massive data-heavy ground infrastructure?
Velocity is the real-time data ingest and analysis engine. It handles the massive IoT data streams generated by ground support equipment and telemetry systems. Think about the Crawler Transporter.
One of the largest self-powered vehicles ever built, carrying the SLS rocket.
Right. Velocity can ingest and analyze vibration, temperature, and pressure data from it instantly. It can detect anomalies that could signal a mechanical failure before it becomes catastrophic. And it feeds that real-time anomaly detection directly into the Launch Control Center, giving operators crucial advance warning.
Moving past launch to actual lunar operations, how does GIS support the work on the Moon and Mars?
Geospatial capability is foundational for lunar surface planning. The Artemis Internal Science Team, AAST, uses sophisticated tools to design where the astronauts will drive and walk. They use ArcGIS Pro for complex traverse planning.
Analyzing factors like slope, lighting conditions,
which is crucial near the poles, yes, and communications coverage, all to maximize science return and minimize risk. This is critical precision mapping.
And this need for precision tracking goes beyond the moon, right? It touches the next big mission, Mars Sample Return.
Yes, the terrestrial portion of that mission, the Mars Sample Return Sample Receiving Project, requires an absolutely ironclad chain of custody. Every single piece of extraterrestrial material needs precise location tracking, inventory, and security monitoring from the moment it enters the facility.
It's a classic high-security GIS workflow ensuring integrity and accountability for potentially priceless and, well, hazardous materials.
That's right.
Now we have to address the Science Mission Directorate, SMD. This is a massive cultural hurdle because of NASA's SPD 41A policy, which mandates the use of open-source science, OSS software. How does a commercial entity like Esri successfully pitch COBSS into a directorate that legally requires open source?
This requires a highly nuanced counter strategy. The phrase you use is and, not or. The account manager must not try to fight the OSS policy. That would be a losing battle. Instead, they position Esri as the secure, stable, maintained infrastructure that enables open science to scale and reach decision makers. The open source code can be the engine, but the open source community cannot guarantee the same service level agreements, the 24/7 technical support, or, most critically, the security assurance that FedRAMP high certification that Esri provides.
So the argument is that open source provides the novelty and the research, but CITES provides the reliability and the accessibility needed for operations and dissemination.
Absolutely. Esri becomes the translator and the delivery mechanism for the scientific outputs. And this is facilitated through rigorous interoperability. Esri is fully compliant with open standards like OGC, STAC, and most importantly, cloud-optimized GeoTIFFs, or COGS.
So ArcGIS can consume data directly from NASA's Earth Data Cloud without any proprietary conversion or duplication,
making that vast scientific data immediately operational.
And this leads us directly to the exciting integration of science with artificial intelligence, or GeoAI. This feels like the future of NASA's scientific outreach.
It is the democratization of science. The recent focus has been on geospatial foundation models, such as Prithvi, which was developed collaboratively by NASA Impact and IBM. The game changer is that Esri has integrated these open source models directly into ArcGIS Pro.
Okay, explain the difference this makes for a user. Why is this integration so important?
It creates a low-code or even a no-code environment. Previously, if a city planner wanted to use NASA's sophisticated climate change models to analyze urban heat islands, they would need to be a specialized data scientist. They'd be writing hundreds of lines of complex Python code to process massive satellite imagery.
And now?
Now, using the Prithvi models embedded in ArcGIS Pro, that same city planner can basically click a button, run the model on NASA data, and get instant actionable analysis. It significantly increases the real-world impact of NASA's scientific investment outside of the agency.
So that makes Mandel Maskey, the Impact team lead, a high-priority target. You're helping him fulfill his mission to get his award-winning AI tools into the hands of the broadest audience possible.
Exactly. The goal is collaboration to widen the adoption of those models. And finally, the ArcGIS Living Atlas is positioned as the premier public-facing vehicle for disseminating NASA data to that broadest possible audience. Policymakers, the general public, non-scientists.
So by contributing validated data to the Living Atlas, NASA fulfills the Space Act Agreement goal of making their data accessible to millions of GIS users globally.
And demonstrating the public value of their missions.
We've built a comprehensive case based on mandates, infrastructure, and mission needs. Now we shift into the operational execution strategy. We need a detailed breakdown of which groups, people, and contracts are the highest priority for the Esri account manager. This is the strategic target map people, places, and partners. Let's start with the control points, the systems integrators.
You cannot execute a comprehensive enterprise strategy at NASA without the systems integrators, the SIs. They're the gatekeepers. They control the multi-billion dollar contract vehicles, which makes them the absolute highest priority.
And the single most critical vehicle is CSCI International and the NCFPS contract. Why are they the linchpin?
CACI holds the $2 billion NCFPS contract to consolidate IT services across all centers. This is the new enterprise roadmap. Before NCFPS, GIS was bought haphazardly. Now CATI dictates the standardized IT platforms.
So if CCI designs the future standardized infrastructure without ArcGIS Enterprise embedded,
Esri is locked out of every center's budget for enterprise services. The strategy has to be a high-level, aggressive pitch. Propose an enterprise GIS modernization roadmap directly to CCI leadership.
And embed ArcGIS Enterprise as the standardized geospatial service catalog item within NCTAPS.
Right. CCI is incentivized to standardize and find cost efficiencies, which an enterprise license agreement, an ELA, under NCTAPS provides instantly.
That's securing the budget and the path. Okay, next we have Leidos and the AEGS contract, which manages the pipes.
Leidos holds the $2.5 billion AGIS contract for communications infrastructure, cloud, and data centers. They manage the underlying network fabric. And since GIS data, especially high-resolution imagery and real-time streams, is notoriously bandwidth-heavy,
the strategy has to be a technical partnership, not just a sales pitch.
Exactly. You work with Leidos architects to optimize network performance for heavy data from products like ArcGIS Image Server and ArcGIS Velocity. You need to ensure their cloud infrastructure is specifically tuned to handle heavy geospatial traffic without lag during mission-critical events.
And the third major SI, Periton, handles the space network with the Sense contract.
Periton manages the $1.8 billion Sense contract for telemetry and tracking. They manage the complex array of global antenna and assets that communicate with missions. The pitch here is direct operational visualization.
So position ArcGIS Velocity for real-time visualization of network asset coverage.
Showing operators where tracking gaps exist and where antenna arrays are pointing, it turns abstract telemetry data into an instant, actionable, common operating picture.
Finally, we have the procurement vehicles, the SCWP VICE vendors.
Vendors like Carahsoft, Red River, and Impress. They're essential for the actual purchase orders. The challenge is ensuring they understand the complex strategy.
They need to be enabled to sell complex system of system solutions.
Right. Specifically packaging indoors, mission, and velocity, rather than just passively fulfilling low-margin orders for desktop licenses, which is, you know, very common in federal software procurement. They need to understand the value of the enterprise solution.
That's the contractor layer. Let's move to the physical layer.
Yeah.
The high-priority NASA sites centers. Which centers should the account manager prioritize based on budget, operational risk, and internal adoption success?
The prioritization reflects the urgency of Artemis and infrastructure risk combined with those consolidation needs.
And Kennedy Space Center, KSC, is clearly number one.
KSC is the operational hub for Artemis launches. It faces extremely high climate risk due to its coastal location, and it functions as a highly complex multi-user spaceport with commercial partners like SpaceX and Blue Origin. The critical opportunities here are selling ArcGIS Mission for launch security and logistics.
And leveraging the platform for crucial climate resilience adaptation planning.
Using the geospatial system to justify multi-million dollar infrastructure hardening projects.
Second is the Proof Point Langley Research Center.
ORC.
ORC is the internal GIS gold standard. The proven ROI of up to $1 million per year savings from their digital twin makes them the most important internal champion. The strategy is simple. Leverage the internal success story and the champion, Brad Ball, to mandate the digital twin model agency-wide by positioning their success as the enterprise standard solution template.
And third, the largest human spaceflight center, Johnson Space Center, JSC.
JSC is the heart of human spaceflight, mission control, and also a major future of work pilot site due to the need for massive campus consolidation and optimization. The key opportunities are twofold. ArcGIS indoors for immediate facility management ROI.
And providing sophisticated support for lunar surface planning and the highly secure Mars sample return sample receiving project managed by the ARS teams.
And we can't forget headquarters, the policy and budget hub.
Right. Headquarters and Goddard Space Flight Center are also high-priority targets. GSFC is the brain for Earth science, home of the impact team. The focus there is on GeoAI integration. HQ is the policy hub, where the pitch must focus solely on enterprise compliance, governance, and audit mitigation to people like the CDO.
Finally, the specific high-priority personas, titles, who control the money, compliance, or mission execution. We need to align the pitch to their specific concerns.
We have to focus on the statutory roles first.
The compliance leader.
David Salvagnini, the chief data officer and SOGI at HQ. He is responsible for GDA compliance and the overall AI governance framework. The pitch to him must be governance. Esri provides the automated compliance framework for GDA, and the trusted, secure FedRAMP deployment environment for GeoAI.
His job is made easier by this adoption.
And the technical champion driving the internal success.
Brad Ball, the GIS team leader at RRC, he's the evangelist. The strategy is pure support. You provide him with the marketing and technical resources needed to present his documented ROI success story, that $1 million in savings, to the OSI leadership, forcing the mandate across the agency.
Who's responsible for the massive multi-million dollar facility overhaul?
That falls to Will Peoples, the OSI GIS program manager. For him, the focus is the tangible ROI from space optimization and maintenance efficiency using ArcGIS indoors and the enterprise standardization required for GDA compliance across the entire infrastructure portfolio.
And the future of NASA science.
Manuel Maskey, the impact lead. He needs adoption for his foundation models. The pitch is collaboration, a technical exchange between his team and Esri R&D to integrate open source models like Prithvi into ArcGIS, ensuring they're widely consumed by non-specialist users, democratizing the science.
This detailed prioritization leads us into the final crucial piece of the puzzle, the proposed phased approach for the account manager. We need a clear executable plan that details the immediate, midterm, and long-term actions.
And this action plan is structured to maximize immediate impact on compliance and infrastructure before scaling up to high-profile mission work. It's all about prioritizing securing the core infrastructure and the budget.
Phase one, secure the core, months 1 to 6. What are the immediate foundational steps that secure the enterprise foothold?
Three immediate non-negotiable actions. First, the NCCEPES engagement. They must immediately engage CKCI program leadership and architects to embed ArcGIS Enterprise as the standardized approved service catalog item within the NCCEPES contract. This is a land grab that secures the budget path for years to come.
Second, addressing facilities management, leveraging that internal success story.
A facility summit. Convene OSI leadership and key center directors using the LARRC digital twin, led by Brad Ball, as the undisputed centerpiece to prove the ROI. And then propose an immediate KSC pilot for ArcGIS indoors.
Because KSC is high risk, high visibility, and a multi-user spaceport.
Making it the perfect test case for scaling the indoors model agency-wide and addressing climate risk.
And solving the legal liability.
Third, a targeted compliance focus. Approach the CDO office, David Salvagnini, with a GDA compliance accelerator package via ArcGIS Hub. You show him precisely how it can automate the metadata generation and inventory requirements that the OIG flagged as deficient, closing that audit gap immediately.
Moving into the second half of the year, phase two, expand to mission, month 6-12. We shift focus to high visibility mission programs to demonstrate the system's worth to the astronauts and engineers.
Capitalizing on the Artemis visibility is essential. The first action is an Artemis POC, a proof of concept. You target the Exploration Ground Systems EGS program at KSC for a formal demonstration of ArcGIS mission for launch complex security and recovery logistics.
And highlighting the offline capability for remote recovery zones is the key technical differentiator there.
It is. And then second, you solidify the partnership with the scientific community.
The GeoAI integration.
Yes. You facilitate a formal technical exchange between Manuel Maskey's impact team and Esri R&D. The goal is a tangible, certified deliverable, creating a standardized NASA GeoAI toolbox for ArcGIS Pro. That establishes it as the standard low-code interface for consuming the foundation models and democratizing NASA science.
Finally, the long-term strategic view. Phase three, strategic partnership, months 12 plus. How do they lock in their position for the long haul?
This phase is all about demonstrating global value and long-term sustainability. First, interoperability. Leverage Esri's global footprint to facilitate crucial data interoperability between NASA and the European Space Agency, ESA, for the Mars sample return mission.
So standardizing the GIS for the secure sample receiving facility on ArcGIS ensures seamless, verifiable data handover and chain of custody.
It does. And the final piece is demonstrating that ROI to the American taxpayer.
This is powerful public value.
You propose a joint NASA-Esri climate resilience hub for the federal government. Hosted openly on the Federal Geo platform, it would utilize NASA's unique climate data and Esri technology to serve actionable information to other federal agencies like FEMA, NOAA, and the USDA. This fulfills the broader mandate of making Earth science actionably accessible to the nation.
This brings us to the final synthesis. It's clear from all our sources that NASA is moving into an era defined by operational persistence and enterprise consolidation. The fragmented hobbyist approach to GIS is just. It's unsustainable under these three converging vectors.
That is the entire argument distilled into a single sentence. By aligning ArcGIS with speed to mission, by supporting Artemis operations, efficiency by delivering documented ROI via digital twins and indoors, and security by enforcing FedRAMP and GDA compliance, ESRI positions itself as the indispensable nervous system of NASA's future.
So the strategy is dual-focused.
Exactly. Secure the infrastructure layer immediately through the systems integrators like CACI, while simultaneously dazzling the mission directorates with high-end analytical capabilities like GeoAI and real-time operational support.
The final recommendation we found is a powerful statement for leadership. Focus on infrastructure as a mission enabler.
When the foundation is secure, compliant, and efficient, when the $32 billion physical infrastructure is protected from climate risk, the lights stay on, and the data is auditable, the agency can focus all its energy on accelerating its high-profile missions to the Moon and Mars. ESRI is presented as a system that makes that foundation happen reliably.
That is a phenomenal deep dive into the operational complexities of space exploration. It really reminds you that even the most ambitious celestial goals depend entirely on a robust, well-managed foundation right here on Earth. Location intelligence connects the audit failure to the lunar landing site.
It's the ultimate expression of the adage. What gets measured gets managed, and everything NASA does happens somewhere.
So we leave you with one final thought to mull over. Think about the long-term Moon to Mars architecture. That sustained lunar infrastructure, the habitats, the power grids, the mining sites, will rely entirely on standardized digital twin technology from the moment construction begins.
It will require a constantly updated GIS-based nervous system built into the foundation from the very first footfall to ensure sustained success, not just a single moment of arrival. If you can't map and manage the infrastructure on the moon, you can't live there.
And that digital governance requirement starts now. A truly fascinating challenge. That's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the deep dive. We'll see you next time.